Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 218 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am good. It has been another long while since I've been on, but I am in my post-teacher world now. I am no longer a teacher and I am loving it and enjoying it.
I think it's understandable why you had some time off this time around, because you've been settling into a new job. So, you know, that's fine.
I have been watching a bit, but surprisingly, not being a teacher anymore has also unleashed a bit more of a social life. So I've been seeing a lot more people and going out a little bit more and having like extended coffees and so my TV watching surprisingly is down a little bit, but I still have had time to watch a few things. So I recently finished, just off of my lot of bucket list, I finished Life in Pieces, which we now know is the final season. That was I really liked that. It was just a nice little antidote. It had a crossover between like a Modern Family and almost like a Friends type thing, where you had all these characters and they went through different things and you got to see their stories, and I liked it. It was nice, harmless comedy. Such a shame that's gone. I also finished Divorce with Sarah Jessica Parker. That was a really good ending to the season. It was quite like a cyclical story. I think that's gone as well, isn't it, Dave? I think they've stopped that, or is there going to be one more?
I can check that for you. Yes, that has gone as well.
Yep. So again, I like that ending. Then I finished Glow. I binged Glow in a day. So this is my new non-teacher life. I sat down one Sunday and I basically binged it because, you know, I can do that now. And I felt proud of myself. It wasn't the greatest season, but again, I liked what they did to it. I liked their storyline and where they went with it. A nice little ending to that season two. And also Queer Eye, which I did over a series of days when I was sort of setting up for my new job, a sort of that little gap in the middle where I was sort of getting ready. That was on in the background while I sort of sorted my life out a little bit. I've started watching, even, you know, there's a difference between started watching and still watching. I'm slowly working on The Boys. I'm about three episodes into The Boys. Love it. It's really good. Very different. I do want to watch it faster, but again, it's just been quite busy. I'm watching Ransom. I now know that's going to be the final season. I think I've got about three episodes left that go out on Universal. That's me loving a procedural every now and then. And a bit slow to the game, but I've started watching The Society. It's sort of like become a little habit for me and a friend. We're sort of watching The Society together. But I've started watching, because that's not enough, A Confession. I watched that last week. It was on ITV.
Yes.
And Martin Freeman, based on a true story. And it's good, nice little twist at the end, but the twist being put in when you know it's all a true story, there's a fine line between reality and drama.
Right.
Where the makers of the program are clearly trying to make it a drama that they want their audience to come back to, but we do know the outcome, but they're trying to make it in a dramatic way. I like it. I like Martin Freeman, and I love Siobhan Finneran, who plays the mother of the girl who's gone missing, anyone who's not watched it. But it's definitely a nice ITV One drama that, you know, is going to pull in the audiences. I've done half an episode of Jack Whitehall's Travels with My Father, which was dropped on Netflix last Friday. And I was actually on a train while I was watching it, and I found myself laughing out loud. So that's a really positive sign.
Yes.
A really interesting opening to the first season, where he takes his dad to try out naked yoga.
Yes, there've been clips of that floating around all over the place today. Yes.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And then I know you don't watch it, Dave, but yes. Everyone's favourite autumn warmer. It's a Great British Bake Off.
Yes, it's back. Yes.
Yeah, straight into it. And I know you've not seen it, but they're just hitting their 10th anniversary. So this is a sort of a special episode. So they did a baker's dozen. They put an extra contestant in to start, which means there's going to be some drama in the, along the way because they're going to vote out two people in 1 week. And Dave, that is
yes.
nail biting stuff. I have watched a couple of films, haven't got to the cinema as much as I'd like to, but after watching Toy Story 4, which was obviously very nostalgic and nice and happy, me and my friend decided to explore Netflix, and we found a little gem, Red Sea Diving Resort, which is a Chris Evans film.
Okay.
And it was released earlier this year on Netflix, so it's all very much under the radar, and it's based on a true story. And you know, sometimes I struggle with those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to enjoy this, but it was a really, really good film. I enjoyed it. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't, you know, a five-star epic thriller, but it was just a really well-told film. Chris Evans comes across really well. You've got Michael Kenneth Williams is in there as well. You've also got a bit of unknown people, but also some well-known people. Greg Kinnear appears in it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You've also got Alessandro Nivola. He's pretty new on the scene, but he comes across really well as his character, Sammy. And I just love the interplay between the characters. And if anyone wants to see it, it's absolutely true story. It's about setting up a hotel in Sudan to try and get refugees out. The Jewish refugees from Ethiopia trying to get them to escape Sudan in 1979. It's fascinating that it was a true story.
Wow.
That there was this hotel on the Red Sea that they turned into a diving resort, and the spies or the agents pretended to be the staff of the hotel.
Right.
Fascinating stuff. Please, if anyone wants to look at a gem, go there.
Oh, that sounds good.
I'm going to surprise you, Dave.
Yes.
I've been playing a video game.
Oh, my God.
I know. This is very unlike me, but my friend has a Nintendo Wii, and we always play Mario Kart because that's the only game I can really handle. And then he went and got Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order.
Right.
And so I started playing that. And one afternoon literally went by where we probably spent about 3.5 hours playing to try and get to a certain point. And I was like, what's happening to me? I'm playing a video game. But, you know, it was Nintendo. Therefore, and then Marvel Universe. And so it's very much an easy entry. But I don't know, have you played Alliance 3, The Black Order? Or?
I haven't. But bless you, you got the name of the console wrong because you called it Nintendo Wii, and it's Nintendo Switch.
So close.
So you know, you're still maintaining that level of not really understanding video games, which is great. But no, I've not played it. I know Matt plays it quite a lot, I think. So yes, it's not one that I've tried. I have a Switch. I don't use it anywhere near as much as I probably should do. It's around somewhere, but I'm far more of a PC gamer than I am a console gamer. So, you know.
But that's me playing games. If you could go back and edit the word Wii for Switch, it would make me sound much more.
Oh no, I'm leaving that in.
Anyway, Dave, what have you been up to in the I've heard of what you've been watching since I haven't been on, but what have you done in the last week?
Last week I did The Loudest Voice, which stars Russell Crowe, although you not really recognise Russell Crowe. He's playing the founder of Fox News, essentially, or the person that was brought in to run Fox News by Rupert Murdoch. He got fired under a very large cloud and subsequently died, which is not giving anything away because they open with his death. So, you know, that's fine. There was a lot of sort of sexual harassment stuff going on around him. And it's a really interesting look at them building Fox News, which, I mean, of course, as I'm sure most of you know, Fox News is essentially the Republican news channel in the US. And where they kind of start from, which is the fact that he's talking about, you know, how a lot of the news is very left wing, and he feels that they're missing the right wing voice, and that's the audience that they should go for. That was all sort of his idea. It's surprisingly quite well balanced, because it could very easily have been a very sort of left wing, you know, Hollywood hit job on, you know, given the subject matter. It seems to be reasonably well balanced. they're not shying away from any of the bad stuff, but it is also telling the story as well, and just sort of gives you an overall intriguing look at sort of how the thing came to be what it is now, which is essentially a propaganda arm for Trump's presidency. But it sort of shows how it kind of built to that point from where it kind of started from. So it is quite interesting how they've put it together. The second episode deals quite a lot with 9/11 because they'd not been on air that long when 9/11 came out, and how he sort of grabs that and twists it and actually goes on to help Bush. I mean, literally sort of phone calls between him and Bush's aides and stuff. So Roger Ailes is the guy that was behind Fox at that point. So yeah, that's a really interesting show. It's on, I think it's six parts. It's on Sky Atlantic. It's two parts in at the moment, but it's all on Now TV and on Sky Catch Up if you want to go and catch that.
I've heard that there's some comments out there about the prosthetics not being great.
I've not had a problem with that. I mean, I'm sure some people maybe have said that, but I think the prosthetic work is actually pretty decent. I mean, really, you do forget that it's Russell Crowe under there. You really do. He doesn't come across as Russell Crowe at all, you know. So I think he's doing a really good job. He's interesting and different. And yeah, no, Loudest Voice, that's called. It's on, as I say, Sky Atlantic. Worth going to watch that. The 100 came back for its sixth season, finally. That is now airing on E4. Interesting opening episode, because if you remember the end of the last season, they'd all escaped Earth and they'd all gone into a cryogenic sleep, and then they were woken up by somebody saying, actually, you've been asleep much longer than you thought you were, because we were looking for a new planet because the Earth is lost and this is the new planet. So it's sort of, it's a bit of a resetting back to them going down to a planet and exploring again, and new issues and new problems. So that's really good. I enjoyed the first episode of that. It's given us a nice bit of injection. So we've got the whole of this season to go, and then I think there is one more season to come after that. Yeah. And I'm still working my way through the MCU, which is, I started rewatching the MCU right from the beginning. I'm up to Guardians of the Galaxy in phase two. So I've got...
Oh, wow. Good for you.
I'm doing pretty well. I've got Avengers Age of Ultron and Ant-Man to go out of phase two next. It's interesting how tricky it is to find some of these without, you know, you are basically having to go and buy them. They're not on any of the streaming services.
Yeah. What's going to happen next year with the change in the streaming channels? Will they suddenly all be in a nice, neat line for us?
Next year, I suspect, or whenever it is that Disney Plus launches over here, which is supposed to be sometime in the next couple of years, I suspect that that's the reason why you can't find them on any of the other streaming services, because they're just not allowing the licenses to be renewed. I think that is probably the case. So some of them are still on there, but not all of them. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy actually was. It's on Sky Cinema at the moment, so I managed to pick that one up. But some of the others, like Winter Soldier, I had to go and buy a copy of that. Some of the earlier ones as well. Thor the Dark World, I think I had to buy a copy of, which slightly pained me. But it's actually better movie than I remember it being, that if you're watching it as part of a sort of set, you know, and it's an interesting stepping stone in the whole kind of thing, because it got a lot of derision, that film, but actually it's better than I remember it being. So it's not as good as the later Thor movies, which I think are the third one, which Ragnarok I think is a great film, but I'm enjoying
Are any of them that are you watching for the very first time, or are they all you've watched them all?
No, I have watched them all at one point or another. I have seen them all once already. So it is more of me going back and revisiting and seeing where the kind of changes come in and where there is a slight alteration in sort of, you know, direction maybe for the MCU. And I think it's when the Russos take over, which I think is Winter Soldier is the first one that they do. And it's when they start to get involved. And Ant-Man as well, where you get more of a kind of comedic element coming in. Or rather, even Guardians, actually, where obviously you've got a talking raccoon in there. So, you know. I think it's around this point where there is a kind of shift in direction for the films. So I'm really enjoying it. It's nice to go back and just kind of rewatch that whole first phase and second phase and third phase again. So I am enjoying my walk through that. I advise people to go and do it. It's worth doing.
Excellent.
So that's the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So TV and film news this week, we have some renewals and cancellations and pickups. We start off with a renewal and also an ending, because it is Grace and Frankie that has been renewed for a seventh and final season. That actually means we've got two seasons left, because season six is coming in January 2020, and then there'll be another season in 2021. So we've got a bit of time. They've given fans quite a while to get used to the idea that it is coming to an end. And, you know, seven seasons is a great run. It'll actually be Netflix's longest running original series, because people were questioning that, going, well, didn't Orange is the New Black run for seven seasons? Yes, it did, but there are more episodes of Grace and Frankie.
Because there wasn't there one random short season of Orange is the New Black? Yeah,
I think there was. So that is why. That is why it's being hailed as the longest running Netflix original. It's a show I haven't actually gone and watched, but I know there's a lot of love out there for it. So,
yeah, I'm a huge fan. I'm a very big fan. I'm trying to persuade a friend of mine to get into it, but he was not convinced when he tried it. He was like, no, he didn't find it funny. I was like, come on, give it a couple more episodes and I think you'll really be into it. So I do enjoy that. It's a very nice winter comedy, I sort of see it. When it comes out in January, it's nice to binge.
Yes, definitely. It is one that I think I will go and watch, because I do like the people involved in that show. So I think it is one that I will sit down and binge my way through at some point. Few advanced air dates. Watchmen, the first season of that, presumably it'll come back for more. Hopefully it goes down well, given how much anticipation there is for it. That is coming on the 21st of October to Sky Atlantic and Now TV. The exact time is to be confirmed, although I rather suspect they'll end up simulcasting it with the US, because HBO are airing it at 9 p.m. on the 20th of October. So if it is the 21st, that could mean a 2 a.m. and then sort of 10 p.m. showing, which is what they did with Game of Thrones and stuff. So I don't know that for a fact. They've still got to give us a time, but I suspect that will probably be the case.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to that. Another one that they've announced over on Amazon, Jack Ryan, that is coming back for a second season. That will be the 1st of November on Amazon Prime. That is coming out in the UK and worldwide. So everybody gets that at the same time. In fact, we will get that before America, because we have the 1st of November before they do, don't we? So
technically, yes, we do.
So we get it a few hours before then. So yes, that will be released on the 1st of November as well. Also announced today, War of the Worlds, which is the BBC version of War of the Worlds, not the one which is coming to Fox. This is the BBC kind of original version of the classic novel, not the reimagining version which Fox are doing. That War of the Worlds, which is a limited series, that's coming in autumn 2019. Being the BBC, they've been vague and won't give us a more direct date than that, but autumn 2019, that is arriving, they have said. The Fox one is due before the end of the year as well, which is a sort of updated, reimagined version of it, and that's an American one. But this is the first time I think they've done a War of the Worlds with a sort of British twist to it. So yes, quite looking forward to that. Moving on to some bigger stories, Hulu apparently are in talks to adapt Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale sequel, The Testaments, which I wasn't even aware she was writing a second book, but apparently she has, and it is due out on the 10th of September. So on the day the podcast goes out, actually, that will be released, the actual novel itself. But they are in talks with Bruce Miller, who is the guy that is behind The Handmaid's Tale, the TV series. They're in talks with him about adapting this as a TV sequel as well.
Okay.
Have you been watching The Handmaid's Tale?
I haven't, but I can just imagine there'll be a demand for this because it's such a hugely popular show. A lot of people talk about it. I missed the boat. I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, and I know probably from every appearance I have on here, I seem to be a person who, if I discover a show before it's hugely popular, I'll watch it. But if I do not discover it and it becomes hugely popular, I'm like, I don't want to watch it. So I did that with Game of Thrones, and then a similar thing with Handmaid's Tale, that everyone's talking about it, and I'm like, if I discovered that when it was like a little unknown, not many people watching it, because I did that with Line of Duty. I remember catching Line of Duty when it was like that, not really watched by many people, and then I carried it through with the trend. But Handmaid's Tale, I do regret not watching it, but I think I'm too far gone now, and there's just too many other things on my list. But the amount of people who talk about it and rave about it, I think that this this would be very popular because they'll want to continue with the story. Is the current series due to end then?
Not at the moment, but I think this is Hulu planning in the early stages of planning that they haven't officially said Handmaid's Tale is due to end, but it is getting to a point where there's probably, in fact, I think we actually said we were talking with Matt last week and we were sort of saying, I think one or two more seasons would do it. You know, so I think maybe you end up with, if this goes ahead, you end up with this being the next season being the final season of Handmaid's Tale and then this possibly taking over. But nothing is confirmed at the moment. I suspect they wouldn't want to do it with any overlap, but this seems like a good way of keeping the brand going without having to pay absorbent amounts of money to the stars of the current series.
Yeah.
The Testaments, the novel, picks up 15 years after the end of the first novel. I won't say what happens at the end of the first novel, just in case people haven't read it and don't want it spoiled. This begins with the explosive testimonies of three female narrators from Gilead. Two have grown up as part of the first generation to come of age in the New Order. The third is a woman who wields power through the ruthless accumulation and deployment of secrets, apparently. So that's all we know about the book, but we'll have to see what happens and whether they alter that in any way for the TV series. Maybe they want to bring some people across, I don't know.
Okay.
But given there is a 15-year difference, I suspect they probably won't, but we'll have to wait and see. So it's not following the current cast in any way, shape or form, but it is set in Gilead and it is a sort of moving forward of that. So we'll have to see. But I think that's kind of interesting. They are only in early talks about it at the moment. It may not come to anything, but I think they are kind of agreed to the rights to it if they want it. So we'll see.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of casting news this week. So a bunch of different shows. Will Poulter, who you might remember from Black Mirror Bandersnatch, he was also in The Maze Runner. He's joined the Lord of the Rings series on Amazon. No idea what he's playing or who he's playing. Although if you've ever seen a picture of Will Poulter and a picture of Hugo Weaving, who played Elrond, there is a striking
similarity.
Striking similarity between the
You've
two.
You've just made me think of that. And I'm like, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I do wonder if they've cast him as a younger version of Elrond. Because given, I mean, the Lord of the Rings series is set thousands of years before, like, Frodo went wandering off to Mordor to drop a ring in a mountain. But Elrond has been around in all that time. He is thousands of years old. So he was around, in fact, I think around the time this is set, he was founding Rivendell. So there is a real possibility you could have Elrond in this show, and he would be a perfect fit for it. We don't know whether that is the case, and you know, it could be he's playing somebody else entirely, but I mean, there is a striking similarity between him and Hugo Weaving, who played Elrond in the movies. And if they're casting based on the movie cast, that would seem like a definite possibility, but we'll have to wait and see. No idea of an air date for the Lord of the Rings series yet. They are still casting. It's very secretive. All we know about it is it's set in the Second Age, and the Lord of the Rings movies are all set in the Third Age. So, like I say, thousands of years before. Don't know much more about it for definite than that. Milo Ventimiglia has also got himself a new role on top of his role on This Is Us, and you'll know him from Heroes and the Rocky movies and a million other things. He's playing 70s Daredevil Evel Knievel for a limited series on the USA Network. Are you aware of Evel Knievel? I remember Evel Knievel.
I do remember him. I heard of him, sort of like a stunt motorcyclist, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
He had a very, very famous jump, particularly. I mean, he was basically a 70s motorcyclist daredevil. There was a very particular historic jump over a place called Snake River Canyon. And it was him basically flying up a ramp and jumping over this huge canyon. And the TV show is a sort of rounded portrait of him, but it's also about this particular regular jump as well. They're sort of, that is the background to it, which is kind of interesting. I mean, I can see him fitting into that role. I remember Evel Knievel from sort of the late 70s, early 80s, for as a very, very small child. I will point out, a very small child. I'm not that old. So yes, I do kind of remember Evel Knievel. I think I probably had, there was like a little toy bike that you had that you could kind of pull back and it kind of went up a ramp and stuff and fired off things. I remember that as a kid. So I think that's kind of interesting, but that's going to be a limited series for USA Network that is doing that. And over on The Boys, which is obviously coming back for a second season, we already know that. Eric Kripke, not want to leave somebody behind. His previous show, Timeless, we know very well, got cancelled. Goran Visnjic and Claudia Dormant, who were both stars in Timeless, they have now landed reoccurring roles on The Boys for the next series as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So they're both going to be showing up. Goran is set to play the recurring role of Alistair Adana, who is a charismatic and shadowy leader of a mysterious church. Claudia is going to play Victoria Newman, a young Wonderkin commerce woman, also in a recurring role as well. So they're actually going to be reunited with Malcolm Barrett, who played Rufus, who pops up in the first series as Vought's international press relations writer, Seth Reed. So it's actually going to have three of like the Timeless people as well. On top of that, you've got Ada Cash joining, who was in Fussy Verdon. She takes the role of the hero, quote unquote, Stormfront. And Chantal Van Sanden, who was in Shooter and was in Flash and also had a guest starring role in Timeless as well. She plays Billy's wife, Becca. She's going to be popping up possibly in Flashback. I don't want to give anything away for that, but she will be popping up in the second season as well. So interesting casting going for the for The Boys. And I'm glad that, you know, Eric Kripke sounds like a brilliant guy, and I'm glad he's sort of just roping in, you know, friends and people he knows, and that's
he likes
stuff.
People he works with. I like that section, Dave. A nice little section called casting news. It could almost be another section.
Yes it could be. Moving on, there is a TV series based on Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea fantasy novels, which is in development. Apologies if I butchered her name. It is the Earthsea books, which are a collection of five novels plus some short stories based in a rich fantasy land consisting of hundreds of islands. The first book, The Wizards of Earthsea, follows the story of Ged, the greatest sorcerer in all Earthsea, known as Sparrowhawk in his reckless youth. He was hungry for power and knowledge, but by tampering with long-held secrets, he unleashes a terrible shadow upon the world. Novel tells of how he redeems his mistake by mastering the mighty words of power, taming an ancient dragon and crossing death's threshold to restore the balance. The novel series tends to feature mainly people of colour as the main characters and has an emphasis on understanding human nature and the natural world and the delicate balance between the two. I don't really know the books particularly, but this sort of sounds like quite an interesting one as a sort of fantasy thing to jump into.
I've not heard of them before. I'm just wondering, is there an appetite for that? There possibly will be. Is there a note on the broadcaster or the developer, or is it?
No, nothing on the broadcaster at the moment. It's not got a particular home. The production company is A20, and it's Jennifer Fox, who is the Oscar-nominated producer of Nightcrawler, Michael Clayton, and The Bourne Legacy, are the people behind it. There have been adaptations before. The BBC have actually done radio adaptations of the books. There was also an incredibly unpopular one that Sci-Fi did in 2004, which was an adaptation, I think, of the first book. Very unpopular, mainly because they whitewashed all the characters. And as I said, it is very well known for the fact that it's got people of colour in the main cast. So that got them in quite a lot of trouble. Studio Ghibli also did an anime adaptation, which was very, very loosely based on the novels in 2006 as well. There are a few versions kicking around, but this, I think, is the first time that the entire series has been together for adaptation in one place. The author has actually passed away now, but she apparently, just before she died, gave her blessing for them to be turned into a series of films. And that sort of morphed into being a TV series from that, with the blessing rising of the son of the author as well. So, okay, you know, it is sort of all above board. They're not stepping on anybody's toes. It sounds like, you know, and they are saying that, you know, they're very aware of the responsibility that they have with the property. So I think they're going to be fairly true to the books, I would have said, when they're dealing with it now. Mm. And lastly, on a slightly lighter note, CBS are developing a police procedural, which no change there. It's from the creator of Monk. It's based around Einstein.
Of course.
So, yeah. It's a US version is developed by Monk and the Good Cop creator, Andy Breckman. It's based on a German series that has been out there. I think ran for 3 seasons before it was cancelled. It's the brilliant but directionless great-grandson of Albert Einstein. He's smart, smooth-talking, comfortably tenured professor, but when he gets into trouble with the law, he's pressed by the police to help a local detective to solve their most puzzling cases. It is essentially a cross between Instinct and Elementary. I mean, which are two shows which have just gone off the air, one being canned and the other one having run for like 7 seasons, and they've both just finished. So this is screams at being something they're trying to bring in as a replacement for it. We'll see whether it goes anywhere. They are only looking to develop it at the moment. We'll see whether it actually happens. I think that NBC tried something last year with the same property and decided against it. But if anybody's going to be able to pull this off, it's probably going to CBS, because they got away with it with Sherlock. So, you know, we'll see.
I'm just doing a little bit of research there to make sure that Einstein definitely could have great-grandchildren, and yes, he could.
Okay.
One of his children definitely did have further children. Mm. I thought I'd do a little bit of genuine research there, because I was like, is this possible? Yes, it is.
Yeah, so there is a German series out there of the same name that is ran for 3 seasons, was based on a film. Apparently there was a film in 2015, a German film, which they based it off, and then they had it running for 3 seasons. So yeah, I mean, I quite like The Good Cop. The Good Cop was a show that ran on Netflix. It seemed very out of place for Netflix because it was a very CBS procedural kind of show. That was quite good. I know Monk has quite a lot of fans, so Andy Breckman's probably the right person to be handling this. We'll have to see whether it actually goes anywhere, but yeah, that's it. It is in development. We'll see whether it goes any further. So that's all the news for this week. Let's move on to the interview.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The interview this week is with Mike Prestwood-Smith, who is a sound re-recording mixer. He'll explain a little bit about what that job is if you don't know when we start the interview. But he worked on the recent movie Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic. He's also worked on a huge, huge swathe of films from things like Captain Phillips. He worked on the recent live-action Aladdin movie, Dumbo. He worked on Mary Poppins Returns. So we talk a little bit about working on that. He worked on Fighting With My Family, Mission Impossible, Tomb Raider, The Danish Girl, Kingsman, a whole swathe of things. He also worked on Captain Phillips as well. Massive, massive amount of different films. He was a lovely, wonderful guy to talk to. And if you're a fan of early 70s children's TV cartoons, keep listening until the very end of the interview, because there was a little interesting tidbit that came out in that. So it's well worth listening. Here's the interview with Mike. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you on and talk to you about your various, well, huge list of projects. It's quite ridiculous, your that catalogue of stuff.
I guess it's starting to get a bit long now. I remember looking at IMDb years ago going, God, look at all those films that other people have done. God, they must have been doing for ages. And suddenly I'm looking at mine going, oh, I'm one of those guys. You know, yeah. I've been here a long time.
Yeah, I mean, let's start off with a few basics. First of all, you're a re-recording mixer. Yeah. For people that haven't heard us interview somebody that does your sort of job before. Do you want to just explain what you do?
Yeah. So a re-recording mixer, they usually work when, certainly in movies, there's usually two of you. One takes care of music and dialogue and the other takes care of effects. And our role is to take all the tracks that Sound Editorial have created and Picture Editorial and basically balance them so that we get a good sounding movie at the end of it. It's like mixing a record, but with pictures. So there's lots of things similar to mixing music, but ultimately there's a whole story that has to be adhered to and understood. And, you know, part of the job is technical, and a big part is finding a consensus amongst filmmakers and, you know, driving it forward in that sense. I often compare it to midwifery insofar as it's yours, a focus for everyone to go through, a conduit in a way where everyone has to sort of go via that one point towards the end. And when the film's born, it's sort of, you hold it up and smack its ass and off it goes, you know, it's a bit like that.
Yeah.
Slightly crude way of putting it.
How did you get into it in the first place?
Oh, long. I can do a long version or short version. I'll try this short one and see if it's enough. I studied in New York a long time ago, and just when samplers and digital recording and everything were just sort of happening, and got a good knowledge of that and came back to the UK and started working for a commercial company that was doing sound mixing for commercials. And I got into sound design and we got into samplers and started doing sound design with samplers and stuff. And then sort of trod the boards in the commercial world for a while, so, you know, 2 or 3 years doing commercials, and then got into TV. And I kind of went through all sorts of things, recorded ADR and Foley, and I did TV drama. And then I got a gig at Delane Lee in 97 or 8, I think it was, as an assistant mixer, because I had a Harrison console that they just bought, and I kind of knew how to use it and no one else did at that time, so I got the job there. Yeah, and just started mixing films, smaller lower budget films, and temp mixing and doing short films and things there. And then got a big break in 2000 with Billy Elliot, which I very fortuitously landed on my lap, and I got that film, and then the phone sort of rang from that point onwards, really. And you know, I've been mixing films ever since, but I still keep my hand in, you know, doing music particularly, because that's a love that I've always had. And in fact, I did a score for a movie a couple of years ago and continue to do little bits and pieces as I go along. So I try and keep my hand in all sorts of things, but ultimately film mixing does require a fairly continuous focus, you know, if you're going to stay in that market. And it's quite a small little world, so you have to kind of keep on top of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you do music as well has probably served you quite well, certainly recently. I mean, Rocket Man being the thing that you've most recently done.
Mm.
How was that to get involved with? And you're dealing with Elton John of all people. Was Elton particularly involved in that process? He seems like the sort of person that would get quite involved with something like that.
Well, you would have thought so. I mean, I think he very graciously decided to be very vocal in who was going to be doing the film and how the film would be. I'm sure he was very involved in the script and all that stuff. But once Taron was on board, and I think Elton was very keen to make sure that whoever was going to do that part was going to do it all in with singing and acting and everything. And I agree with him, a more compelling, complete performance. So once all the pieces were in place, he was amazingly hands off. I think he was quite keen to not meddle too much with it and to let Dexter and all the filmmakers and actors really bring their version to the fore. I think he was keen to be as impartial in the process as possible, which I think was very wise, because I think one of the problems with biopics, especially musical ones, is that they can get a bit too sort of cloying for approval, and you know, they can wash the truth a little bit too cleanly too. And I think what Elton was keen to portray was the reality of what his experiences in life and in the industry and his addiction and you know, all the things, the difficult things that he went through. I think he was keen for that to be very much a part of this film. And I think it's what makes the film as compelling and powerful and as different as it is that it just feels absolutely genuine. And I think Taron really embodies that sense of what's genuine, because he just brings an absolutely genuine performance to the fore. And, you know, I think down to Elton and everybody, really, that's the way it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, Taron, an incredible job from him and really amazing performances. And I mean, he's been doing it on stage with Elton since then as well.
Yeah.
Had he actually sung on film before?
Yeah, he did. He was one of the characters in Sing, I think, a musical. He did.
Right.
And I think he may have even done an Elton number in Sing, actually, which could have been why people went, oh, hang on a minute. He's, you know, he can actually sing. I remember early on, we were mixing Kingsman, The Last Kingsman, with Matthew Vaughan, who's a producer on the film.
Right.
At that time, they were negotiating this film. It was in development, but very close to going into production. And they were doing the deal with Taron. I remember the sort of toings and froings going on in the background. And, you know, at that time, I remember him going in to Abbey Road to go and sit with Giles Martin to do all the tests and stuff. And I remember the palpable air of excitement that came in the day after he'd been there, because everyone was just sort of blown away with how great he sounded and, you know, how great he was going to be. I remember it being a kind of moment, even though I had no idea about really what the film was going to be at that point. I remember everyone thinking, wow, this is going to be something special, because he really did sort of blow everyone away, on, you know, in his first test recordings. He's got an amazing voice. You know, it's a Welsh thing, I think.
yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
He's not the only person that sings in the film, is he? So were there sort of any reluctant people that were wanting?
Well, I have to be a little bit cautious about this, because I did say something in an interview recently about Rich Madden. I read it and went, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I heard, so it didn't come from me, that Richard wasn't entirely keen on doing a vocal. I think when he realised he was, it was like, not reluctantly, but I think he was cautious about about how much of that he was going to have to do. Having said that, the songs he does, Honky Cat in particular, is just, you know, wonderful. And, you know, I don't think anyone did a bad job. I think everyone did a great job in it. And a lot of it was live, and some of it was pre-recorded. And, you know, I think the performances really stand up, not all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. For you, what was the most challenging thing on the movie?
Well, I guess there's a couple of things, really. I mean, firstly, the story is very much told through the songs. So the vocal of the songs does a lot of the narrative lifting. And even though the songs are not in any way chronological, they're all doing narrative work. So getting clarity on the vocal and making it a very clear storytelling leading component of the film was a challenge insofar as, you know, mixing any sort of vocal with music. But if you're going to add all sorts of other things in there as well, getting that sort of clarity through is complex. You know, there's a lot of work to kind of shape the sounds around that to make it feel effortlessly sort of intelligible, really. And not only that, but you're taking a vocal components from all sorts of places, you know, live, pre-recorded, post-recorded, you know, all sorts of things. So making that feel integrated with the performance and having it really stick to the screen is actually a really crafty sort of sleight of hand. You know, there's a lot of mixing work required to kind of to help the viewers feel like this is actually happening and it's real. So a lot of that, the challenge in any musical, I think, is making it feel like it's an actual performance that you're witnessing and it's all real and it's all happening. And I guess concurrently with that, finding a layer, and finding it's quite a subjective layer of reality to help sell that idea, is finding the consensus of what that should be in any given moment is quite difficult, because it's a fantasy, this movie, and so a fantasy is by definition a very subjective sort of thing. And so finding what that consensus was kind of song by song was, you know, a trial and error thing. And we did kind of come across a fairly clear route through. Dexter was very pragmatic about what he liked and didn't. And so that made it a lot easier. And really all the filmmakers were. But just finding that, you know, sifting through all the bits that were created for the film, or, you know, our sound designer, Matt Collins, and our supervisors, Danny, you know, did a lot of work. And a lot of that sound, with a big score and a big sort of musical component, a lot of those sounds didn't get through. And it really is, like with any of these things, it's a lot of it is actually subtractive, you know, choosing the bits that you want to hear at any given moment, rather than trying to fit everything in. And so, like with any mix, that's probably the biggest component. But with a musical and with such sort of dense sections that we have, getting the right components to read at any moment, you know, is a challenge. Definitely, it's what it's all about.
Yeah, there's nothing worse when you're watching that sort of film and seems really obvious that the vocal isn't attached to what they're doing live on screen. It really stands out. So such a balancing act.
Yeah. It is, really, because also such a sort of particular aesthetic that, for me, I really want to believe every single word, you know. And yet there's a moment where you let go of reality and the song sort of transcends that.
Yeah.
And then you're into a slightly different territory where the sound pressure levels of the vocal aren't necessarily looking quite how they're performed on screen. And so there's always this sort of compromise of finding the most dynamic sort of sounding track you can and yet adhering to the performance. I guess that's the balancing act, yeah.
Yeah. Is there one section of the movie you're particularly proud of?
Yeah. Yeah, there's quite a few. I think one of the ones I think works really well is Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. It's quite an early piece, and it's certainly one of the most complex. And also, there's a big narrative device in it where we go from a child version of Elton to the grown-up version of Elton with Terrence. Right. And so there's a sort of conceit built in, which is, you know, a hurdle that you've got to get over already. But not only that, the whole song is set to one continuous shot that sort of has a lot of dense action going on in it, you know, street brawls and a carnival and a pub brawl and stuff. And so getting the feeling of a layer of reality with that, and yet having this big super dynamic sort of track with a vocal telling us the story at the same time is definitely... It was quite a few go-rounds to get that feeling like it was right. And actually, the go-rounds were mostly subtractive. You start off trying to get everything in, and then you keep going back and going, oh, we don't need that, we don't need that, we don't know that. What's the story telling us here? And you slowly subtract away until you've got the bits that you need. And that's a complicated and time-consuming process. But when you see the end result, I always feel this as a viewer watching other films that I haven't worked on. If you're not dissecting it, if you're not getting taken out of the story, then basically the job's been done. And if you're not getting taken out of a story that's as dynamic and as sort of fanciful as that, and with so much being told to you through sort of music, if you're not getting bumped, then something's really working, you know.
Yeah.
And for me, that song really does do a great job of that. And so, yeah, particularly proud of that. But there are others, but that one in particular, I think, is great.
This isn't the only musical you've been working on recently. I mean, you've done Dumbo, Aladdin, Mary Poppins, all for the Mouse movies. Is there a particular amount of pressure when you're approaching something like, particularly something like Aladdin and Mary Poppins, which are such beloved things and you're kind of creating new versions of them? Yeah. Does that add an extra layer of pressure to you over certain other films?
Yeah, interesting. The pressure is nearly always down to the people you're with, the filmmakers you're working with. Mm. You know, I think you can be working on the biggest blockbuster on the planet, and if everyone's relaxed about it, then the pressure sort of eases, you know. So that's a component. But I would say Mary Poppins was, you know, Rob Marshall is a wonderful, wonderful director, and he embodied that film with so much charm and wonder. And I remember watching it the first time, kind of slightly terrified that it was just so beautiful and lovely and so well done. And Rob's one of these guys that basically invites you to bring your A game anyway, and it's just what he does. And so I remember thinking that there was hallowed ground, you know, there's no question, you know, that movie hadn't been, it'd been tried to make that movie a few times and it hadn't happened. And suddenly there was this wonderful new version of it that I felt, and the songs that had been written for it were just great. And I remember feeling like we've got to do this one. Absolutely, you know, this has just got to be timeless, you know. And so I suppose you're kind of feeling like you really got to do it justice. You know, I couldn't say that that's not the case with all of the films I've worked on, really. I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm trying to do, you know, but ultimately I'm trying to do the best job on every film I can. But
of course,
I guess when it's something as hallowed ground as Mary Poppins, then there is that slightly added factor of, I guess, the pressure comes on a bit with that. Yeah. it's a good question.
We spoke with Matt Johnson, who is the VFX supervisor on Mary Poppins. He talked a bit about the problems when they were filming it of having to sort of turn very, very sunny days into very overcast days, and at the end sort of having to do the opposite. Is there a sort of sound department equivalent of having to make sort of a almost complete 180 switch on something?
Well, I suppose with Mary Poppins and Aladdin and all the musicals I've done recently, Rocket Man as well, there's a whole pre-record done before the film gets shot, which usually actors will lip sync to on stage, either in ears or sometimes on speakers. On Mary Poppins, Rob liked to have the playback going across on speakers so that I think other characters could hear it, and it was, I sort of gave it more of a live feel. Mm. And I think we did it a couple of times on Rocketman as well, actually. And so what happens is you end up with a sort of pretty mucky live track that really has got all this stuff on it that you've got to try and get out. And often, if you're trying to salvage a live performance, and in both of those movies, there was quite a lot of live performance in and out, trying to get that all to feel like it's one sunny day, you know, rather than one a bit of a cloudy day, a bit of a sunny day. That's definitely a sound equivalent of that, just matching everything in to make it feel like one continuous performance. There was a scene early on in Mary Poppins when Ben Whishaw is in the attic and he sings the first one he did to camera, and it was a lovely, lovely song, very, very subtle. We kind of went line by line in and out of live, back to production, back to live, back to production again. It was like an embroidery that we kind of put together, and it was quite complex because he's moving around this sort of attic space, so it had a lot of natural sort of perspectives and things on it, and getting that all to work, I remember that was a real challenge. And actually the other thing is with that particular film, Rob likes to put his film together with a temp score that's written for the film. And when I say temp score, I don't mean sort of just knock it out on a computer. I mean a proper recorded score that's, you know, we've got musicians in a room.
Wow.
So he records the orchestra and all the pieces first of all, puts the film together, and we sort of chop our way through that score. And then once the film is sort of distilled and sort of crystallized to its glorious completion, he goes and then records it all again with another orchestra. But this time, obviously, all the joins are part of the performance, so it plays a lot better. And generally speaking, that's the orchestra that we use. But of course, as with all these things, often things get loved over time. And so we went backwards and forwards with old score and new score, sometimes bar by bar, you know. And so trying to manipulate 120 tracks of orchestra, not just from mixing but editorially speaking, back and forth with a vocal that's kind of flying around between live and pre-record and all that, it's a complicated task logistically and creatively to get that all to feel seamless. And I'd like to think we did it. Yeah.
So what have you got coming up next? Is there anything you could talk about?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be doing Guy Ritchie's next film, which I think is now called The Gentleman. I think it was called Tough Guys for a bit. That's quite soon. And then I'm doing another Disney film called The One and Only Ivan, which looks really interesting. It's a lovely story about a gorilla kept in a shopping mall in the States. But it was a great book, I think. And I think it's going to be a really interesting movie, but that's towards the end of the year. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I mean, you know, things change, but hopefully those two are happening.
Cool, that's good. And the last two questions that we always ask everybody. First thing would be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I just finished The Years and Years, which was bloody brilliant, I thought. So, yeah.
I've been told that, yes. I haven't started it yet. I'm kind of working my way up to it because I'm told it's somewhat brutal as well. So.
It really is, but it's terrifying, but brilliant. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
Yes, I'm still working up to that. I will get to it.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present or future, which TV show would it be?
Mr. Ben.
Awesome. That's a wonderful choice. I would love to see a live action version of Mr. Ben. I'm amazed nobody's gone to it yet.
Careful what you wish for. I think it might be on its way.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That would be, that would be brilliant. I loved that show when I was a kid.
Wasn't it? It was one of those formative things that snuck into your subconscious and stayed there forever. And so many actors I speak to and stuff say it's one of their favourite things and it really helps shape their minds and things. You know, it's one of those. Yeah.
It's such a natural thing to work on live action as well, because it's, you know, it's a guy that kind of basically goes and can be anything in any episode. It's just, it's wonderful, you know.
It's coming. I can tell you that fairly confidently.
Awesome. I will keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
Fabulous. Well, it's been lovely chatting.
Great.
Good luck with the new projects, the upcoming projects. I hope they all go well. And hopefully we'll have you back on at some point and we can talk about those.
Thanks very much for some great questions.
No problem. Talk to you soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. So that was the interview with Mike Prestwood-Smith. Hope you enjoyed that. Rocketman is released onto Amazon Prime and other streaming services on the 14th of September. You can also get it on Blu-ray and DVD on the 30th of September at the end of the month. So keep an eye out for that. Here's some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have the much anticipated The Island, which we've been talking about for a while. That's I-Land, because why not? Netflix, 12th of September, that arrives. This is the show about people waking up on an island with no memory of who they are or how they got there. It seems from the trailers that they're in some sort of virtual environment and they're maybe being guinea pigs or something. Stars Kate Bosworth, Natalie Martinez, and Alex Pettifer are three of the stars of it. It's a big ensemble cast. Looks like it could be an interesting one to go and watch. It's sort of kind of a bit Lost-like-ish with a bit of sort of The Matrix thrown in over the top by the sounds of it. So that looks like it could be kind of interesting. 12th of September for that. The Ranch, season 4 or part 7, depending how you're counting. That's on the 13th of September on Netflix, which seems Ashton Kutcher, Sam Elliott, and Eliza Cuthbert, and the rest all turn back for the next part of that series. I think that's possibly the final bit as well, so that is coming. Temple, which comes to Sky One, that is on the 13th of September at 10 p.m. This stars Mark Strong, Daniel Mays, in a darkly comedic thriller about an illegal clinic in the abandoned subterranean network of tunnels underneath London. We've posted some trailers for this. It looks like it could be quite good, and Mark Strong as a lead is always worth watching, so that is out there from the 13th of September on Sky One, worth going to watch. And Top Boy returns for its third season after a very, very long break from it being on Channel 4. This is coming to Netflix on the 13th of September as well, which sees the cast return to East London and more drug dealing stuff going on. So that is back. And I think you can get the first two seasons of Top Boy on Netflix as well if you want to go and catch up first. So that is everything for this week, unless you've got anything else.
No, I mean, it's quite quiet, but we are getting closer to October, and we know what October means with those highlights for next week on TV lists. They just get longer and longer.
Yes, October is going to be mental, because the amount of stuff coming back is going to get more and more insane over the next couple of months, probably through like September, end of September, October, November. It is going to be crazy with the amount of stuff coming out, and then we've got a little break over Christmas, and then January it all starts up again.
So, and they all start coming back as well, seasons and things like that. I can't wait. I love it every year.
Yes, me too. It's awesome. So we'll have to see what gets picked up and what disappears, and you know, because things start arriving back on US networks from about mid-September, and then we start getting them towards the end of October. Usually we're about a month behind because they have to leave a gap because of all the breaks that the US have in the networks. So if people want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Then go onto Twitter and follow at Grey the Geek. I have been incredibly quiet, and I'm going to make a real effort to be tweeting a little bit more. So please come and follow me. Come and have a conversation with me about what things you're watching, and I can try and get involved a little bit more. Now I've got some free time, Dave. I've got free time.
Awesome. For us, of course, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram @GeektownUK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.